When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's up, everybody? Kevin Smith with you on The Call Sheet, episode 47 of our show. Man, I'm listening to the rain coming down right outside here right now. I don't, it might even carry over onto the recording. It's like a deluge. I'm wondering if I got to get ready with some ark construction here anytime soon, man. This is just March weather at the Jersey Shore. Probably the least enjoyable time of year here in my part of the woods. Hope it's a little bit nicer wherever you are listening to our show here today. And like I said, episode 47 of The Call Sheet. And that's going to give me an opportunity to kick off the show by talking about one of the great defensive backs of all time, Mel Blount of the Pittsburgh Steelers. But really, this conversation would be partially about Mel Blount, but more so about how Mel Blount's physical style of play forever changed the NFL. And I mean literally, because the NFL passed a rule in 1978 that changed the way that defensive backs could play the game of football and really opened the door to the passing revolution that would sweep in sometime soon after. So we're gonna talk about Mel Blount in part one of the show. And then in part two, we're going to talk about free agency. The free agency period kicks off on Monday, at least the legal tampering period does. And we're going to give you one player that every team in the NFL might want to target in the upcoming free agency period. All right, so here we go. Mel Blount, third round pick out of the Pittsburgh of the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 1970 NFL draft out of Southern University. As I said, one of the greatest corners to ever play the game. Finished his career with 57 interceptions. That still ranks 13th all time. And he was a six-time Pro Bowler, first team All-Pro selection four times, the defensive player of the year in the NFL in 1975, a Hall of Famer, and one of the cornerstones of that Steelers dynasty in the 1970s. And the thing that made Mel Blount so good was his size and physicality. I should say one of the things, the thing probably that most defines Mel Blount, his size and physicality. He's a big corner at almost 6'3". He's strong as an ox. I mean, he simply bullied wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. And because the rules of the game at that time allowed a corner to jam a receiver anywhere on the field as long as the ball wasn't in the air, creating separation from Mel Blount was nearly impossible. And it's almost funny, if you ever get a chance to watch like one of those classic games that the NFL Network will sometimes play from the 70s or the 80s, it feels like you're watching a completely different game from what we see now. You're watching defensive backs bully receivers all over the field. And you can see defensive linemen take two full steps after the quarterback has released a throw and level him. If you're watching the game from the 70s, you can see defensive linemen head slap offensive line. That was a thing. You could head slap an offensive line, take a full-blown roundhouse with an open hand and slap an offensive lineman in the head. Now you could chop block defenders on the offensive side of the ball. Receivers, they could cut block in the open field. And pass interference at that time was pretty much a myth. I mean, there's no doubt that the league needed to govern itself more carefully and that the subsequent CTE and concussion scandals that broke, a decade ago showed us just how dangerous football really was back in that earlier era, which made the year 1978 such a pivotal one for the year in terms of both the safety of the game and really its integrity. In 1978, largely because the Steelers had become such a dominant defense, built initially on their bruising steel curtain unit, but really with the linebackers and the D-backs, everybody on that defense was physical. The league changed its rule that year on how defensive backs could play wide receivers. The new rule banned contact with receivers from beyond 5 yards from the line of scrimmage. And it was named the Mel Blunt rule, literally named after Mel Blunt, whose style of play was cited as its impetus. Basically, the league decided that allowing a defender to jam a receiver down the field before the ball was thrown was muddying up the game and making passing too difficult. The popularity of football in America at that time was really beginning to explode. And teams like the Cowboys, right, the so-called America's team, with their flashy uniforms and the catchy star on their helmet, they were the model that the NFL wanted to promote. I mean, the Cowboys were one of the first teams to use the shotgun formation on offense. Their passing attack was electric. Their quarterback, Roger Staubach, he was an All-American boy. He'd gone to the Naval Academy. He was clean cut. And he was quickly becoming one of the biggest stars in the league. And the NFL recognized that the appeal of the Cowboys and their potent passing game was one of the biggest draws that they had. And they also knew that if teams like the Steelers were allowed to play their brand of bully ball, that it would really jeopardize what the league saw as one of the biggest reasons for its growing popularity, namely the popularity of the pass. And so in the end, I really think the implementation of the Mel Blunt rule was as much a business decision as anything else. The passing game was popular. It was great for ratings and for the growth of the sport. And the league needed to do something to encourage its place in the game. You know, it's no coincidence then that the passing of the Blunt rule represented a turning point in league history. I mean, the game almost immediately began to skew more towards the passing attack. The Blunt rule opened up the field by creating more space for receivers and letting them run. The game got faster as a result. Speed became more of an emphasis than simple brawn. I mean, later rules would go on to restrict contact on quarterbacks and protect receivers from hits once the ball was thrown. You know all this, and you know the rest, right? Offenses started to increasingly trend towards the pass. And we have the numbers to prove that. Offenses in the 1970, on average, threw the football between 45 to 50% of the time. And today that number is closer to 60%. That's a big change. So it's a passing league right now, right? And teams that lack an elite quarterback, they rarely become contenders. Now, this has not lessened the value of corners in the NFL. It's actually done the opposite. It's actually more important now to have great corners than it ever was, because you obviously have to defend those elite NFL passing games. It's just that those guys who cover the receivers, they have to do it way differently today than it did back in the Mel Blunt era. Corners are built differently. They play differently. They're probably technicians more than they are bullies. They have elite quick twitch and change of direction skills. They have phenomenal reaction speed, tremendous instincts. If you watch last week's NFL Combine, the corners simply popped. I mean, everybody runs under 4.5. I mean, 4.5 used to be a blazing time. Today, everybody runs under 4.5 at the corner position. Everyone can flip their hips. Everyone can cut on a dime. Everybody tracks a ball like a detective. I mean, that's not to say that Mel Blunt and some of the great players in his era couldn't do these things. I mean, if they played today, they would just be different, right? Mel Blunt couldn't play the game like Mel Blunt today. He'd have to adapt and play by the rules that his dominance as a defender helped create. You know, what's interesting about all of this, Mel Blunt, who's still alive today and will talk about these things, he wears the Mel Blunt rule like a badge of honor. He once told a reporter that he considered it an insult that people in the league office thought that if they took away his physicality, that they would limit his effectiveness. And to his point, Mel Blount racked up three straight Pro Bowl nominations in the years immediately after the Blount rule was passed. And that was at a time when the Pro Bowl was like a real nominee, a real thing. It wasn't anything like what we see today. The Pro Bowl was a real game back then where they really hit each other. And it was the best players in the league. So three Pro Bowl nominations post-Mel Blount rule was really impressive. And he had 17 interceptions over that time. It didn't really limit the effectiveness of Mel Blount, the player. In short, Mel Blount could play the game in any era under any circumstances. But the fact that he played it how he did caused the league to change its rules. And that is among one of the greatest compliments that you could ever bestow upon a player. So, number 47, the great Mel Blount here on the 47th episode of The Call Sheet. A guy whose impact on the game is probably greater than most people realize. When you watch NFL football today and you see the football in the air 60% or even more of the time, you got to think back to number 47 and understand the way the game was played in his day, really, to know why it's in the air so much today. All right, going to take a break. On the other side, I'm going to give you some thoughts on the looming free agent market as we prepare to dive in next week with the official launch of free agency. And we're going to do one move that each of the league's 32 teams should make this free agency period, whether it's signing one of their own players, signing somebody else's, or maybe making a big splash with the trade. I expect to see all the above headed our way very soon. So come on back after the break. All right, welcome back to The Call Sheet. Kevin Smith with you here from stormy southern New Jersey. As we get into part two of today's show, we're going to talk about the looming free agency period. Free agency opens on Monday, at least the legal tampering period does. And in this part of the show, we're going to do one move that all 32 NFL teams could make to bolster their squad this offseason, particularly in the free agency period. And we'll go alphabetically through the NFL. We'll go A to Z. Well, I guess that's, technically speaking, that would be A to W. I think the Washington Commanders are the last team alphabetically. So from Arizona to Washington, what's one move each NFL team could make to strengthen themselves in this free agency period? So let's start with those Cardinals. They need help on defense and really on the line specifically. And the Cardinals have $41 million in cap space to play with. So they could take a run at Chris Jones, the Kansas City defensive lineman who I thought should have been the MVP of the Super Bowl, a guy who really kind of bet on himself last year by taking a one-year deal, holding out initially, then taking a one-year deal in Kansas City, wins a Super Bowl. He's got a couple of rings. Chris Jones might want to chase the money now, right? So maybe the Cards will make a run at Chris Jones. They certainly would bolster their front by doing so. On to the Atlanta Falcons, where I have been making the case over the last couple of weeks that they should trade for Justin Fields. I still believe that they should do that. Their second pick in the draft, which is number 44 in round two, would probably get it done. They might even not need to go that high, depending on what the market for Fields should be. So I'm all in on Atlanta and Fields. The Buffalo Bills. Well, the Bills are probably going to lose Gabe Davis, who I think is an underrated wide receiver. So they'll be in the free agent market for receivers. I think Marquise Brown of the Ravens, formerly of the Ravens, would be a nice pairing with Stephon Diggs there. They got a solid tight end core, and you put speed on the outside and Diggs and Brown, that would make that Buffalo receiving core pretty darn dangerous. All right, to the Carolina Panthers. They need talent around Bryce Young, so adding a wide receiver would be key. And the aforementioned Gabe Davis would be a great target for Carolina. Calvin Ridley's a possibility too. I mean, it's a thin market for free agent wide receivers, especially since some of the better ones like T. Higgins have been taken off the board with the franchise tag. So the Panthers would do well to nab one of those remaining ones, and Davis or maybe Ridley would be good targets for the Panthers. All right, Chicago. So now the Bears have tagged their big free agent corner, Jalen Johnson. They need to move on to the business of finding that trade partner for Fields. And again, I still think Atlanta will be a great suitor. Although there's another team that I'll mention in just a moment who I think the Bears might be able to work a deal with too. So if Chicago could get a second round pick for Fields, that's a big win. Cincinnati Bengals. I think Dalton Schultz should be their target, right? The Bengals are a little thin at tight end. They've locked up T. Higgins at least for another year, pairing him with Jamar Chase on the outside. They got some good depth pieces at receiver on the outside as well. And so if you get a great middle of the field threat, like a Dalton Schultz, free agent tight end from the Cowboys, that could really bolster their passing game. All right, I mentioned suitors for Justin Fields. The Cleveland Browns, does that make sense? Well, maybe not, given the fact that the Browns shelled out about $250 million to sign Deshaun Watson a couple years ago. But the Watson experiment is not working out real well. And I don't know what Cleveland would have to eat to move on from Watson. Probably more than what the Broncos just ate, $85 million to move on from Russell Wilson. But at least bringing in Fields, who you might be able to get for a late second or early third round pick, would both A, create competition for Watson, and B, perhaps supplant him. You may be able to move Watson somewhere else, who knows, or you might just want to move on from him. But it hasn't been a great run for Cleveland. They made a mistake with Watson, I believe, and they might be able to resurrect that by trading for Fields. And if you think that I'm the only one saying this, that's really not true. There's some buzz out there about that. So this isn't some kooky theory that I'm just working up. You never know, man. There's always, it's camouflage season in the NFL. You never know what teams are really thinking, what they're really going to do. Cleveland's been laying low, but now you're starting to hear some bubbling that they may be a suitor for Justin Fields. All right, on to Dallas. Cowboys need linebacker help. They got to get better at the linebacker position. And I think Lavonte David of Tampa Bay would be a great sideline to sideline guy on the interior of that Dallas defense. The run defense got exposed in that playoff loss to Green Bay. I mean, Dallas might go defensive line to try to bolster themselves, but I think David is a really good addition there. You know, they can rush the passer in Dallas, but if they can't stop the run, that won't matter. So give the Cowboys David, who would be a great fit in new DC Mike Zimmer's defense. All right, Denver. The Denver Broncos are next. Kirk Cousins, man, let's take a run at Kirk Cousins if we're the Broncos. The marriage of Russell Wilson and Sean Payton was a bad one. I think Kirk Cousins is a quarterback who much more closely fits what Payton likes to do, resembles Drew Brees in some regards. Certainly not as good as Brees, but has some Brees-like attributes. And I think the marriage of Payton and Cousins would be a much more favorable one. I think Denver could take a run at Kirk Cousins. All right, the Detroit Lions coming off of that great feel-good season. They're pretty potent on offense. They could stand to get a little better up front on defense. And so Christian Wilkins of the Miami Dolphins, that seems like a guy who would really fit their defense well. They move on defense. They want athletic guys up front. Wilkins certainly fits that bill. He would be a great addition for the Lions. All right, the Green Bay Packers. They're going to be in the safety market. They're making no secret about that. I think Geno Stone of the Ravens is a guy who's being linked to Green Bay. He's a really good back-end ball hawk, had 7 interceptions last year. Not a great run defender, but if Green Bay wants a deep middle safety, he would be an excellent addition. All right, Houston Texans. Man, it's all about defense, I think, this offseason for the Texans. They're pretty well stocked on the other side of the ball. But they could make some upgrades on defense. They've got the 4th most cap space in the NFL. They really need some linebacker help, and they could make a run at Devin White from Tampa Bay. His leadership is excellent. He's still got the ability to play, only 28 years old. I think Devin White would be a great addition in the middle of that Houston defense. On to the Indianapolis Colts. They tagged Michael Pittman. So I think you could probably cross wide receiver off the top of their list. Instead, Indy could target Kendall Fuller, who had a really solid season at corner for the Commanders. He can play inside. He can play outside. He's still just 29 years old. He's got some good football left in the tank. Kendall Fuller would be a nice fit in Indianapolis. All right, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They need playmakers, man. They need playmakers for Trevor Lawrence, especially if Calvin Ridley leaves. Unfortunately, it's not a great wide receiver market. But the Jags could make a run at Odell Beckham Jr. if he doesn't re-sign in Baltimore. I think Trevor Lawrence needs a veteran to lean on down in Jacksonville. And OBJ remade his career a little bit this past season in Baltimore and really could sort of find himself with a great quarterback down there in Jacksonville in Lawrence. All right, that brings us alphabetically now to the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's give them nothing. They shouldn't have anything this offseason, right? Enough. Let the rest of the league catch up. But honestly, if they do lose Chris Jones, then they're going to need a veteran replacement. I don't know. You know, I don't know if they're going to have Christian Wilkins money. So a cheaper alternative and a guy who is a heck of a run stuffer, maybe not the pass rusher that Jones is, but is a very good run stuffer, is Indianapolis's Grover Stewart. Had a really nice year, 29 years old. Still got some gas in the tank. I think Stewart, again, not going to replace everything Jones does, but he'll give them that good veteran presence against the run. To the Las Vegas Raiders. All right, man, this is my spot for Russell Wilson. I think they should sign Russ. I think that's the move. Wilson to the Raiders. I mean, Aiden O'Connell, who was the rookie last year there, did some decent things, but he could probably use some seasoning. He could benefit from sort of sitting a little bit. Wilson probably be able to give the Raiders a couple of good years. They got a good roster in Vegas. They need the quarterback, though. And, yeah, I think Russell Wilson will be motivated to go to Vegas where he would get to try to stick it to Sean Payton in Denver twice a year. So let O'Connell sit, learn behind Wilson, hand him the reins for a season or two in Vegas. All right, the L.A. Chargers. What's Jim Harbaugh want more than anything? Jim Harbaugh wants to run the football. He wants a great run game that he can pair with his stud quarterback. And so, you know, I think he's going to want to bring Austin Eckler back. Eckler's a free agent, but he's a scat back type. So for me, given Harbaugh's affinity for running the ball between the tackles, I think Derrick Henry to the Chargers would be a heck of a marriage. Marry up Derrick Henry, who rushed for over 1,100 yards last year, demonstrated that he can still play. He wouldn't have to get 300 carries like he often got in Tennessee with Eckler in the fold. And so give Henry to the Chargers and let Jim Harbaugh kind of remake the offense around the passing of Justin Herbert and a power run game. To the Rams. The Rams are probably going to lose their starting center, Brian Allen, in free agency. So I think they could reach across the desert over there to Vegas and nab Andre James from the Raiders to fill that vacant center spot. That would be a nice move. Maybe the Rams will look for one of the studs, deep draft class for centers. But if they go the free agent route, I think Andre James is a nice addition for them. Miami Dolphins are next, right? The Dolphins should probably do everything that they can to re-sign Wilkins, but he might leave. I think it looks like he's intent on leaving. So short of Chris Jones, who would be interesting but might command more money than they can afford, and the fact that it's a pretty thin market for interior defensive linemen, Miami's got to make a run there, got to make a move there, right? One veteran who may fit, the Steelers might part ways with Larry Ogunjobi. He might be a cap casualty, and he might be a stopgap as Miami looks to the draft then to provide some depth if they lose Wilkins. So an Ogunjobi-type player into Miami, while if they lose Wilkins and can't sign Jones, might be the move. Minnesota. All right, well, it looks like Cousins is moving on. And if he does, the Vikings will probably take a quarterback at pick number 11. They may even try to move up from there. Maybe they'll sit at 11 and take Michigan's J.J. McCarthy. But they're going to need a veteran backup either way to possibly start until that young draft pick is ready to go. And that guy could be Gardner Minshew. I think Gardner Minshew to the Vikings makes a lot of sense. He'll have a lot of weapons in Minnesota, Addison and Jefferson and Hawkinson. Anybody named Sun is going to be a good wide receiver there. And Minshew showed in Indianapolis last year, he can still play, man. Maybe not 17 games a year, but if you draft a J.J. McCarthy and you need Gardner Minshew to get you to the halfway point until McCarthy's ready, that could be a good move for the Vikings. All right, to the ends now, to the news. And let's start with New England, right? They tagged Kyle Duggar. So now they can go quarterback shopping as well. And I think just about everybody believes that they'll draft a quarterback with the number three pick overall. So they're kind of in the same boat as Minnesota. They may need a veteran to fill in for half a season or so until that young QB is ready. This could be a good landing spot for Ryan Tannehill, right? Tannehill may be linked to the Steelers because of his association with Arthur Smith, but New England could be a good spot for Tannehill as well. On to New Orleans, right? Kenny Moore, man, the corner from Indianapolis, who can play inside and out. He could really fill the void that the Saints currently have at slot corner. Slot corner seems to be one of their biggest needs. Kenny Moore's a good football player. I think that the Saints may target him. The New York Giants, they need linebacker help. Big time linebacker help, man. And a guy I really like, I think is probably an underrated guy who fits well with their scheme, is Blake Cashman of the Texans. He's on the free agent market. I think Cashman to the Giants would make a lot of sense and fill one of their big voids. The Jets, man, the New York Jets, they need to protect Aaron Rodgers, all right? Aaron Rodgers needs to be protected from himself, his own body possibly breaking down at age 39. But the Jets need to help him by putting a better offensive line in front of him than they did for those four snaps that he took in 2023. Now, a guy, maybe not the best pass protector in the world, but a guy who really remade his career last year was Kevin Dotson, who the Steelers let go after four frustrating seasons in Pittsburgh, but turned in a Pro Bowl season with the Rams last year. Dotson moving across the country to the Jets would really benefit that run game, and he's developed as a pass protector. I think the Jets could make a run at Kevin Dotson. That brings us to the Philadelphia Eagles. Boy, their corners were bad last year. Bad. And I've talked to some Eagle fans about this. Hey, who do you guys want? The name of Dory Jackson has come up a few times. Jackson from the rival Giants. He almost signed with Philly last offseason, right? Chose kind of at the last minute to go back to the Giants. Dory Jackson going to hit the market. Philadelphia's corners, again, man, none of them had PFF ratings over 70. That's kind of the benchmark for a starting corner in their ranking system. Jackson was above that. He may be a target for the Eagles. All right, Steelers fans, we're up now. Let's dream big, Pittsburgh fans. Look, this might not be the move, and it might not be a move that the Steelers can afford, but it's the time of year to dream. Let's dream big. What have the Pittsburgh Steelers been lacking since they lost Ryan Shazier in 2017 to that devastating injury? They have been lacking a three-down linebacker who can play sideline to sideline, who can stop the run, who can cover the pass. And what wouldn't it be some sweet, sweet justice if the Steelers reached into the division and nabbed Patrick Queen from the Baltimore Ravens, man? I don't know what that'll take financially. I don't know if that bankrupts the Steelers or it hamstrings them from addressing any of their other needs. They certainly need help on the offensive line. But, man, if they could nab Patrick Queen from the Ravens, I think Pittsburgh fans would be absolutely ecstatic, and he would, paired with the Landon Roberts in the middle, who is a thumper, give Pittsburgh a heck of a linebacking unit. All right, the San Francisco 49ers are next. They need a tight end to play behind George Kittle. And I really like Adam Trautman from Denver for their scheme. Troutman's big, 6'5", 255. He's young. He's only 27 years old. He's a good blocker. And he can do enough in the passing game to fit that Shanahan system. I think Trautman would be a nice backup to George Kittle there in San Francisco. Seattle, they need an offensive tackle. They can really kind of take their pick of the guys on the market. Maybe the best guy for them at an affordable price will be Mekhi Becton of the Jets. I think you could see him winding up in Seattle. I think Tampa Bay, who's up next, is going to go all in on re-signing Baker Mayfield. I think that's the move. The number one priority for the Bucs now that they've re-signed Mike Evans is to bring Baker Mayfield back. So I think you'll see that deal get done. Two teams left. Tennessee Titans. Well, Derrick Henry's probably gone. All right. So what do they need, man? They need a running back. So why not reach into the free agent market and grab a slightly younger model, Josh Jacobs from the Raiders? You could see him get targeted by the Titans. to provide them that feature back for their young offense. They're obviously in a rebuild there in Tennessee. Jacobs still has some mileage left in him, I believe. And that gets us to the last team alphabetically in the NFL, the Washington Commanders, the team that has the most cap space of any team in the league. And what do they need? They could probably spend it anywhere, right? If you think about it, I mean, they could go after a quarterback. I don't think there's a quarterback on the market that they would break the bank for. Maybe they'd be interested in Cousins. But, you know, do they think they can win now? I don't know, man. Cousins, I think, has got to be a win now kind of move. So I think really probably the best player that they could target that would help them significantly would be Frankie Louvua of the Carolina Panthers. Not a guy that a lot of teams know much about. He is a great linebacker. He's a great linebacker who could fit a big need for Washington in the middle of that defense. You may see that be like a day one signing of the free agency period. The Commanders pry him away from the Carolina Panthers. All right. Hey, how many of those things will actually happen? The 32 teams, 32 moves they can make in free agency. I have no idea. Some of those are things that are probably pretty obvious, like Mayfield going back to the Bucs. Some of those things are probably pipe dreams, like Patrick Queen going to the Steelers. But you never know, man. That's what makes the free agency period so fascinating. It's like Christmas morning. You just don't know what's inside the wrapping. So, all right. That's our episode. Episode number 47. We started it with one of the best players in NFL history to wear that number, 47, Mel Blunt, a guy whose play changed the league. And we end it with the intrigue of what will the Washington Commanders do with all that cap space come Monday. We can't wait to talk about a lot of this stuff next week. So join me for another episode of The Call Sheet. This is Kevin Smith. Have a great week, everybody.